You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everyone, and welcome once again to In Perspective. My name is Bob Branco. Glad to be here with all of you today. Before we continue, let me introduce our good friend, colleague, and co-host, Peter O'Toole. Peter, how you doing?
Hey, Bob. It's a beautiful day here in Coos Bay. It's a usual day, 65 degrees, 50-mile-an-hour wind, so it feels like about 55. But we're having a great spring, and we're looking forward to a nice weekend.
We are seasonable today, around 60, a little cooler than normal for this time of year. It's around 60, 62 degrees today and sunny. We had a couple of real hot days this week, but we're in a cool down now. We'll see what happens moving forward. By the way, this is episode 465, dated Friday, May 22nd, 2026. Before we continue, let me thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be made available. We start out with Raymond Gay, who's our producer. Thank you for what you do. Peter from Canada, you post our programs on one of your chat boards. We appreciate your help in that way. Thank you. I want to thank our media outlets for airing us when they do. It's always an honor to have the media outlets support us and air us when they can do that. Thank you very much for that. And finally, Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions. Thank you for archiving our programs on my website. If you want to go find the archives, go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcasts. Click on them, and you will see most of our archived programs from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
I want to say hi to Jeanette, our host for today's program, along with Diane, who is our streamer. And because we are being streamed live, let me give out my email address for those people who want to write to us here on In Perspective. It's bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com. Want to say hi to a faithful listener who sends in her comments once in a while. We appreciate them. And that would be Linda Lambert. Thank you very much for your commitment and for your support. Back with us, we have an old friend of ours, former New York Congressman John Lavoutier. Welcome back, John. How are you?
Thank you, Bob. I am well, Peter. I'm well. I love being on with you guys and gals. It's the best hour of the week for me. I look forward to it all week. It's a great way to end. We take this Friday afternoon for people to hear it early next week. And thank you for inviting me back.
We appreciate having you, as always.
John, before we get started into the politics of stuff, it is Memorial Day weekend as we record this. What are your thoughts about Memorial Day and perhaps tied into what's going on these days?
Well, Memorial Day is sort of the, it is the designated holiday, Monday this year, May 25th, to honor those who made the ultimate sacrifice. And I think of the guy I'm named after, John Lavoutier, my uncle, who was shot down and killed by the Japanese off the island of Rota in 1944 in the Marianas Island. Obviously, I never knew him. He was 23 years old. And I've spent a lot of my life trying to find people who knew him, because we obviously have the same name, and the circumstances of his death and what happened afterwards to his mother, my grandmother. And it's a very typical story. She was deaf from childhood and had four children and probably loved this one the most. And he was a great athlete. Went to school, went to Yale, was a great hockey player. Pearl Harbor happens. He joins the Navy, becomes a carrier pilot. Off he goes on the USS Yorktown to the Pacific. Apparently did a good job over there flying. And as I said, he gets shot down, and his wingman never saw what happened to his plane. So they never really knew, you know, did he go in the water? Did he go in the jungle on Rhoda. Was he captured? Was he dead? Well, no one knew. His mother, Mrs. Labute, my grandmother, Florence Labutelier, for the next year and 2 months till the war ended in September 45, she wondered and actually believed he was being held alive. And so on September 2nd, 1945, the Japanese surrender, and there's an armistice signed on the deck of the USS Missouri in Tokyo Harbor. And there are pictures online. You can find all this. All the Allies are there in uniform and accepting the surrender of the Japanese. And one of the first things the Japanese had to do was to give a list of all the POWs they had alive. And they did. They handed it over. It was wired back to Washington. And get this. That was September 2, 1945. 9 days later, September 11, 1945, two Navy people came to my grandmother's house to tell her that her son was dead. And that's a very common courtesy that unfortunately tens of thousands of mothers had to go through during the war, where they're being told that their son or brother or father, husband has been killed. And so they come and they tell her John Labutelier, Lieutenant John Labutelier is dead. And they leave. And within an hour or so, she dies of a cerebral hemorrhage right on her desk in her house. The stress of her son finally, you know, learning that he is not alive blew her head off. I mean, she just blew an artery out in her head and she died that day.
Wow.
Yeah, but. You know, I mean, that's terrible. All of it's terrible, but welcome to war. This is going on in wars all the time. It's not just the soldiers. It's what's going on at home, the suffering of their loved ones. I mean, you know, and this poor guy left a brother, who's my father, and two sisters behind who missed him every day for the rest of their lives. And that's the consequence of decisions about war that we don't think about enough. And this weekend, Memorial Day, is when we should think about it. Not just having a great time at the beach or eating a burger. It's seriously thinking what these people went through.
As a civilian with no personal experience with the military, although I've met many veterans and with a family who had a limited connection with the military, I find it very humbling to hear stories like that. Something that I will never experience. I agree with you. I wish, and I think this is one of the things that happened in the Vietnam War, that a lot of us who, well, I was too young, but a lot of people supported who opposed the war were accused of not supporting the military. And that wasn't the issue. Maybe for some it was, but the real issue was we didn't like the civilians' decision to get us in the war in the first place and the way decisions that were being made. And I think the same thing applies today, right? Once in a while, you hear people saying, you don't support our military. No, we just don't support the decision to go into Iran in the first place. And speaking for me, myself, I don't trust anything that President Trump says about what's going on in the war and find it very difficult to continue to do much of anything except question everything. So that's me. I'm curious.
Let me just say a couple things. I remember Vietnam very well. I was a kid growing up during Vietnam and watched the news every night. I was fascinated by the whole thing. I mean, and when the Walter Cronkite and Huntley Brinkley news went from being 15 minutes to being 30 minutes, they were originally 15-minute broadcasts. They went to a half hour, usually at 7 p.m., depending on what market you were in. And I'm 13, 12, whatever, watching this stuff every night. And I can remember, Peter, one time watching that thing, say 1966 or 7, and thinking, my God, 24 minutes of the half hour have been just on Vietnam. Mm. Nothing else. And as it should have been. I mean, this war ripped America apart and killed 58,000 people, like the uncle I just described. I mean, his story is typical of all these 58,000 guys that died. And I agree with you, but there were on the left a lot of people who let their hatred for the war spill over to hatred for the warriors. Mm-hmm. And the spitting on soldiers when they came back and signs held up that you're a baby murderer and all that kind of stuff. And that really ruptured, this country for a while. And we made up for it starting in the '80s, I think. Once Reagan got in and sort of said, hey, we're going to rebuild the military. And it didn't just mean more planes and ships. It meant we're going to rebuild the relationship between the people and the military, which has been rebuilt. As for the war in Iran, there was a thing in Vietnam. During the week, but several times during the week, at 5 p.m. in, I think it was the Caravel Hotel in Saigon, the press corps would gather for a briefing by our military, and it became known as the 5 o'clock follies, because the military in uniform, these are military people briefing the media, they out and out lied about the progress of that war. And every single briefing made it look like we're winning the war, we're doing great, we've killed way more enemy than they've killed us, all this stuff. And it all turned out to be BS. And of course, we ended up losing the Vietnam War, really. And the same thing here. You watch these briefings with Hegseth and General Kane, and I don't think Kane lies publicly. I think he's very careful about it. But he's sharing the stage with the Secretary of Defense, who's just spinning total crap. And we now know from independent reporting that this war at the moment is going way worse on the battlefield than we're told publicly. 13 U.S. military bases in the region of the Gulf states and all, 13 of them have been rendered virtually uninhabitable by the Iranian drones and missile attacks on them. We've had to move our personnel off the bases to live in hotels because the bases have been wiped out. That doesn't get reported that much. Certainly, Hegseth doesn't admit to it. And then came the report last week out of the CIA about the missiles. Now, if you had watched Trump and Hegseth do the briefings and Trump talking all the time, we've wiped out their Navy, we've wiped out their Air Force, we've wiped out their missiles. Turns out 75% of their long-range and short-range missiles were not destroyed. The Iranians had kept them underground, anticipating bombing. Some of the missile launchers were destroyed and have already been repaired and put back into service. And they have 70%+ of their missiles ready to roll. After all this bombing by our Air Force and Navy, it hasn't wiped it out at all, like Trump and Hegseth said. So again, we got this credibility gap between what the government tells us and the truth. And it's a shame, but it's the way it is.
So why do you suppose that Trump and Hegseth are saying those things to begin with?
Well, I think they're both two peas in the same pod, braggarts, liars, con men, and they want the American people to think this thing's going great.
And but you and others are finding out otherwise. They should have the sense to know that we can find out anything if given the chance.
But they don't. I mean, do you think what I just mentioned, you think any of that's on Fox News?
Probably not.
No. And so the people, Hegseth worked at Fox News. Tr- Trump watches Fox News. Trump's MAGA loving people, they watch Fox News all day. Their heads are filled up with that stuff, not with what we've just talked about.
But I also think there's another component to this as well, which is most people, most sane people, to be editorial, don't watch it much news at all. You know, they don't watch Fox News. They don't watch CNN. They don't watch MS Now. So, you know, and I sort of sympathize with that to some degree, because for a while I was one of these news junkies, when I had a medical condition, I left the hospital and I stopped watching, and I read stuff, but I don't watch TV news anymore. And it's really helped me reprioritize my life and in, you know, about what's important. It's not that the news isn't important, but there are other things that are important as well. And I think many, many folks have come to the conclusion that watching the news is, you know, with all the hostility going back and forth, is really harmful to our mental health.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt that's the trend.
Yeah.
People, I mean, broadcast news gone way down, cable news down, still existing. And the people who watch it are in my demographic, older people. The young don't watch it. I don't know how the young get their news. They get little snippets online on YouTube, on TikTok, I guess, you know, and that's one of the differences in America. It used to be we all operated from a common base of knowledge.
Yes, indeed.
Right? And that's no longer. I mean, it used to be three networks. That was it.
Now you got social media all over the place, for one thing. Everybody's got a different avenue to travel on. It's terrible in a way.
Right. And here's the thing, the social media, Facebook being the worst purveyor of it, they put out a lot of false news that's not accurate. And they cannot get sued for it. And they put out just crazy stuff and people read it. They think it's real. And it's a shame, and it is hurting our country. And it isn't just ideological. It's that we can't really have a debate about what to do about any particular issue, national debt, Iran, taxes, the economy, if we're not operating from some basic, commonly recognized facts.
Yeah. And then you have the problem where one side of the media thinks the other side is giving false information and vice versa. You have all kinds of media accusing each other of false information. So how do we know what to believe? That's what's so terrible about this. Like you have
right.
sources,
right.
social media sources. That's the whole cool. problem.
Well, I tell you, all my life, I have been so fortunate that I somewhere acquired the habit, and I can remember it was in boarding school, I think, and then definitely in college, of reading at least three newspapers a day. And then if I could, I would watch, or I love the radio, so I listen to the radio all the time. And, you know, so you're getting different takes on things from different people. And after a while, you develop your own filter for what you believe and what you don't believe. And that's unique to everybody. And I don't tell anybody else what they ought to be believing or whatever. But if you don't rely on one thing, like a lot of Fox viewers only watch Fox and nothing else. They don't read. They might listen to AM talk radio, which echoes Fox basically. And that's it. And so they're getting reinforced with what they believe, but they're not hearing other stuff, which is a shame.
Just to sort of reinforce what you're talking about, John, I live, as you know, in southwestern Oregon, rural southwestern Oregon. And if you go outside in our neighborhood, you're going to hear news either from Fox News Radio or radio talk show hosts. There is one NPR station here that just broadcasts as All Things Considered and Morning Edition. And I've only heard that station twice in the 3 years I've lived here. Twice.
Wow.
Now in Columbia, Missouri, where I lived before moving out here, it was just the reverse. It was a college town. Most people that I knew had NPR on all the time. And, you know, read the New York Times or at least skimmed it, you know, and, you know, it's just a very different world. It's just a very, very different world. And, you know, those of us in Coos Bay who listen to NPR sort of marvel at what a, you know, unusual, it's just strange. It's just a very, it's not something I'm familiar with at all.
I know. And I think this is happening in various directions wherever we all are.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think it's a shame, but it's the way it is. And so, the internet is really what did it. It's, you can choose the news you choose to listen to. And okay, fine, but you're not getting the other side often.
Right. Well, you are getting the perversion of the other side, you know, extreme view. So I want to sort of talk about a little bit about Iran. So, you know, what do we do now? I mean, the rumor is we're going to go back and start bombing them again. But that the Saudis and other people don't want us to do that for obvious reasons, because they're the ones who are going to get most of the flack for it. So do you have any sense of what might happen next?
Well, what I have read today is a big shot Pakistani government official is either today or tomorrow going to Tehran to try to convince the Iranians to re-enter real negotiations through Pakistan with Trump and see if they can. They got two things they got to sort out: Gulf, the Strait of Hormuz, and the nuclear thing. And you know, the Strait of Hormuz by itself is a tricky problem because it was never closed before. Even with this terrible government running Iran for 47 years, they never closed it. This war has caused them to close it. We can't safely reopen it at the moment. And apparently the Iranians want $2 million for every ship that they let through there, which is going to put a lot of money into that government and is considered an illegal act in international maritime law. You're not allowed to charge a toll to go through international waters, but they don't care. They want to do it anyway. And Trump has even talked about maybe we get in on that with them and share the toll, which is typical Trump.
Yeah, it is typical Trump.
It's just anything to make money, as if that's going to solve the problem. Then the nuclear program is the long range problem, I guess. Although I'm a little baffled over, because not even a year ago, on a Saturday night, Trump bombs their nuclear sites and then announces total success. We have quote unquote obliterated their nuclear program.
It was last June.
Last June. Obliterated. This February, we start up bombing and the whole war. And Trump says, well, we're doing it for regime change, to stop their ballistic missile program, to help the people on the streets. Oh, and the nuclear program. We don't want the. Now that's morphed into a new rationale, which is, well, I have to do it because they were only 2 weeks away from having a nuclear weapon. Now, you tell me. If the program was obliterated last June, how by February could they be 2 weeks away from having a nuclear weapon? Answer, they weren't 2 weeks away. This is all BS from Trump and Netanyahu, both of whom are desperate to come up with a rationale for this war, which they can't seem to win. And in fact, the longer this thing goes on, they're losing. At least we're losing. I don't know about Israel, but, and Israel has different issues in this war than we do. No question. But, anyway, so I think the thing is languishing. And meanwhile, the economy here is going down, and that's the public's opinion that it's going down. I just, before we started this call, I saw a Reuters poll where 83% of the American public say the economy is bad or fair. 83%. And they haven't been this pessimistic in a long time. And that's because of the inflation, obviously the cost of gas. All of this is coming from Trump doing this war, without ever getting the concurrence of the American people first, which is the normal way you go to war. You go to the public, primetime address from the Oval Office. You say, here's a problem. Okay. If it's, they've got a nuclear bomb, then you go on TV. You say, we have intelligence. Here's some of it. We think they're 2 weeks away from having a nuclear bomb. We've got to have to go attack them. It's going to mean higher gas prices. I don't want this to happen for you, but we have, as a country, we have to do it. I've rounded up allies who are going to do it with us. That's the way to do this thing. He didn't do any of it. Just on another Friday night, Saturday, whatever. Yeah, it was a Friday night into Saturday morning. Yeah. He launches this thing, never told the American people what we were doing or why. We have no allies, not Germany, not France, not England, not Japan. None of these countries were ever consulted. Just Trump and Bibi did it. And here we are 2.5 months later, and it's not going well.
And yet, this is the story that really got my attention. We had primaries in a number of states, primarily, southern states and other states as well. And all of those Republicans who opposed Trump in a number of areas lost.
Correct.
And I find that extraordinary. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be surprised because President Trump is popular among a certain group of people, but the Republican Party seems to be totally under the thumb of Trump.
Yeah.
I don't know how. You know, I don't know what's going to happen in the general election. Will some of these folks who won the primary lose in the general election? And then, of course, on top of that, we have this whole gerrymandering piece, which we haven't talked about at all. But I just was sort of astounded by, you would think that some of these people would win, you know, the primary, but all of them lost, including the Secretary of State in Georgia, who, lost the governorship by, you know, the primary by a lot. And everybody now in Georgia who is running, as I understand it, are anti 2000. What am I trying to say? Who believe that Trump lost the election in 2020.
Right.
I just think that's just just amazing, given what you just said.
Well, I share your amazement. I've gotten kind of used to it. I've seen what's happened. The Republican Party is its own little self-contained ecosphere that watches Fox and listens to Sean Hannity on the radio and used to listen to Rush Limbaugh before he died. And inside that ecosphere, they are being fed this crap about 2020. It was stolen. Trump won. Italian space lasers. All this total ridiculous stuff. And they believe it. And I mean, that has manifested itself this week into this creation, hasn't happened yet, but it's talked about, of a 1.776, in honor of the 250th anniversary of the country, $1 billion fund, which is basically, as they call it, a slush fund to give money to the January 6th protesters who were tried by juries, convicted, put in jail for beating up cops, defecating in the halls of Congress, all that. They went to prison through the legal system. Trump pardoned them, and now he wants to give them our money, which is one of the biggest disgraces ever. Now, I don't think it's going to end up happening. I think it has so angered Republicans in the Senate and the House that they're not going to support the thing. But it tells us how crazy this MAGA group of politicians led by Trump, they're just absolutely out of their minds. In the middle of an economic downturn like we're in, to talk about giving taxpayer money to felons who beat up cops, it's beyond belief.
Well, but I guess my question is, how does Congress stop it? Do they have to?
They have to appropriate the money. I mean,
that's right. Okay. Right.
Right. Now there is money in the Justice Department now that they've already given over there for other stuff. Mm-hmm. And the worry is that Trump and Blanche, the acting attorney general wants to be the total attorney general. He might just move money from one account to another, and that the Congress would take him to court immediately. He can't do that. I mean, depends on how the legislation has been written, but money that's appropriated by the House and Senate for X, you can't take it and do Y with it. You got to do X with it within however the language is written of what X is. I can assure you there is no writing, no legislation that says you can give money to felons who beat up cops. That's just, you know, it's
I guess my question is, if there's a vote on this, and, you know, the Republicans still control the Senate, but was it 54-46 or 53-47?
53-47.
Are enough Republicans going to say
yes?
No?
Oh, yeah. So we're taping this Friday afternoon. Yesterday, Thursday, Todd Blanche, the acting attorney general, went to the weekly Senate Republican lunch to talk about this thing. And it's reported, because the press is not in there during the lunch, out of the 53 Republicans, 25 of them spoke against this thing. And it's not getting as much coverage yet, but there is a ongoing breach between Trump and the Republicans in the Senate. And it's getting pretty nasty behind the scenes. Trump really ticked him off this week when he endorsed Ken Paxton, the attorney general.
Yeah,
in Texas against Senator John Cornyn in this upcoming Tuesday's runoff. And Cornyn is a Republican senator for many years, very, very popular among his fellow Republicans. I read this week he, in his career, has raised and given to fellow Republicans $400 million.
Yikes.
Yeah. And that's over a lot of years, but it's a lot of money. And these Republican senators feel terrible that Trump went and undercut their guy Cornyn to support an accused felon in Ken Paxton and to support him. And he's going to have a harder time if he is the nominee, which is going to be determined on Tuesday, as I said. And in November, it's conceivable they could lose Texas because of this. And I'll tell you, the Republicans are really ticked off about that. They're ticked off about the ballroom, the $1 billion in the reconciliation bill for this ballroom thing, which they hate that too. And then came this slush fund for felons. And so there's a lot of bad feeling, apparently, between Thune, that's John Thune from South Dakota, the Senate Majority Leader, and Trump over all this stuff. And, you know, so it feels to me from afar, I'm not there, but it feels to me like things are rupturing for Trump. He thinks he owns everything because he could beat Tom Massey in a Kentucky primary and he could beat Bill Cassidy in a Louisiana primary, which he did. He beat these guys. But outside the primary, there's the rest of America, which you raised a minute ago, Peter. In the general election, 2/3 of this country now loathes Donald Trump. They hate him. They hate the Republicans. They hate the direction of the country. They hate all this stuff. They're not voting Republican anymore. They're going to go in and have a blue wave like we haven't seen in a long time because of all this nonsense.
Well, but I wonder about the gerrymander. We even talked about that. You know, so a number of southern states after the Supreme Court essentially said, black districts are illegal, you know, and so what are the, you know, nationally what the southern states did is to say, okay, we're going to, you know, make this more Republican. And I don't know if how much that's going to impact the blue wave. That's one of the things that's going to.
All right, well, Larry Sabato, the University of Virginia, political guy. He's been analyzing this. He said, if you take all the redistricting that's been done in the last year including this stuff on the Voting Rights Act, we can say, we could assume the Republicans who today in the House have a 3-vote margin, just 3. He said, give them another 10. They have a 13-vote margin going into November, you know, approximately.
Mm-hmm.
And the size of the wave will be measured by the incumbent president's approval rating and the direction of the country in polling. Trump, as of now, has the lowest approval rating of any president ever measured. And the direction of the country, it's something like close to 70% say we're in the wrong direction. So Sabato says, yeah, 13-seat margin. You can expect a net gain of 20 to 30 seats for the Democrats, even with the redistricting, because what they've done is they've spread out Republican votes over other districts, and they've weakened some of these districts. And they might be red, but they'll be red plus 5. If the wave is blue plus 10, then they're going to lose a lot of seats.
Yeah. And then who knows what's going to happen in the Senate, for that matter. I mean, there's some talk that the Senate might flip. I think it's unlikely from what I'm hearing, but it's not impossible.
They got to get a net gain of 4 seats.
Right.
And I think it's very possible now where it wasn't a year ago. I mean, mm-hmm. they're going to win almost certainly North Carolina.
Right.
That's one. Very possible they're going to win Iowa. That's Jody Ernst's seat. She's not running again. And Trump is heavily underwater in Iowa because of the tariffs and agriculture. So that could be two. Ohio, latest polling, dead even. Former Senator Sherrod Brown tied with the appointed senator. So let's say they win that. This guy's very well known. It's a blue wave. That could be 3. Susan Collins in Maine, clearly in trouble. New poll out. The Democrat, Graham Plattner, is ahead 48 to 41. That would be 4 seats. Then you got
I don't trust Maine because Graham is, you know, he's a loudmouth, and I can't see your average middle-of-the-road people voting for him. But what do I know? Maybe you're right.
Well, I don't know either. I think Maine, statistically, it's hard to believe, Maine is the poorest state in America. And so if they're poor, and then you add this economic downturn on top of them, and the disgust with the political system, and through no fault of her own, but she's been there a long time, I think 6 terms. And, you know, I could see in a wave, people like her get swept out.
Sure.
So
it's not that Trump likes her very much anyway.
No.
So Bob, I think let's see what our audience has to say about any of this.
I think that's a good idea, Peter. So you're listening to In Perspective, and our guest is former New York Congressman John LeBoutillier. And it's time now to bring our listeners in on the conversation. You can talk about whatever's on your mind with the congressman. So let me ask Jeanette if there are any hands raised at this time.
We do have hands, Bob. First is...
And before you take them, how many hands do we have raised?
At the moment, we have 6, Peter.
Okay, that's all you need to know. Thank you.
Wow, beautiful.
Thank you, Jeanette.
You're welcome. First one is 626, ending in 388.
That's Mitch from California.
We love Mitch. We love Mitch.
Well, I'm the almost conservative, never Trumper. In 1974, I was a volunteer program for the Pacifica station here in L.A. The counterpart in New York is WBAI, I believe.
Yeah.
And we did, myself and another gentleman did a documentary on disabled Vietnam veterans. It was called The Real POWs Can't Stand Up. And we interviewed Senator Cranston, who was the head of the Senate Armed Services Committee at the time. We interviewed Ron Kovic of Born on the 4th of July. And to your comment that, you know, this president has not gone to Congress. The truth is that no president has gone to Congress, I believe, since World War II. And the effort during Vietnam was a lie. The yeah. Gulf of Tonkin resolution was based on a flat-out lie about what took place. So there is a precedent, sadly, for presidents to basically tell the Congress to go to the devil.
We did have one time, and I'm not defending it, but late 2002, early 2003, George W. Bush is president. It's a year after 9/11. He wants to go to war in Iraq, and he does go to Congress in the fall of 2002 to get the authorization for the use of force. And remember, that was a huge vote.
Yeah.
In which Hillary Clinton voted yes to authorize the use of force in Iraq. That's 2002. 5 and 6 years later, 2007 and 2008, she's running for president against Barack Obama. And the thing that divided them was that vote, that she had been for the war in Iraq and he'd been in the state Senate in Illinois and had voted absent on the thing. He didn't commit himself, but he used that against her, because by the time 2007 and 08 came along, Iraq was a total negative. So they did have a vote, though. They did.
My recollection, though, Congressman, is it was not technically the kind of declaration of war, but you may be correct.
And sure, I think you're right.
Yeah. All I'll say, and you got a lot of calls to a lot of folks want to weigh in. I still believe that the longer this continues, and I think we still have to get the nuclear material out. We know the man is a habitual liar and a sociopath, but the longer this continues, the less America will support him, and I think there will be a blue wave in November. The only problem is that for the last two years of the Trump administration, he'll be ruling by executive fiat, and he'll basically give the Congress the finger. Thanks yeah. very much, and it's always great talking to you.
Thank you, Mitch.
Thank you, Mitch.
Okay, Jeanette, who's next?
Rick is next.
Is that Rick from Florida?
Hi, John. It's Rick. How you doing?
It is Rick.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, I am, first of all, let me say that I'm a Democrat, but, I'm a fair person, and I agree with a lot of what you had said about this war. If I can, let me give you, a quick story about a gentleman that I knew who passed away. He was a World War II vet, and he was in Normandy. And he told me this story. He said that he was behind a tree with a rifle, and there was a German young kid behind a tree with another rifle, and he spoke German. And he said in German, "What are we doing here? We're going to kill each other." And the other guy said, "I don't know." And they put the rifles down and they went and they shook hands and they were friends for the rest of their lives. To me, that was such a beautiful, beautiful story. And I don't know how often, you know, that happens, but man, it should happen more often.
I agree.
You occasionally do hear stories like that. You know, random acts of, I don't know what the right word, kindness
kindness. Yeah.
I have heard stories like that. And of course, these stories aren't reported for obvious reasons.
Right. And that one wasn't reported.
Yeah, of course not.
Yeah.
Congressman, have you heard similar stories?
Yeah.
Or?
Oh, God. Yeah. Going back to the Civil War during ceasefires where for a day everybody would hang out together and then resume war. And look, war is insane. This is just the most ridiculous thing that we have to do this from time to time. And that's why I tried to, at the beginning of the hour, get into the death of my grandmother. Oh, I never knew her, but because it isn't just those two soldiers.
No.
Who may or may not shoot each other. Yeah. God, it's all.
Yeah. It's the families. Yeah. It's everybody. It's everybody.
Yeah.
And you're right. I mean, what happens, you know, during these wars is just, it's just crazy. And yes, we have to honor, you know, the young men who go out and fight, and we should, you know.
And Rick, I apologize. We do have other hands.
Okay.
I think you've made
great
your job.
Very great
well.
Job, Rick.
Thank you for your contribution, Rick. We appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Jeanette.
Stacy, go ahead.
Hi, Stacy. Welcome. How are you?
Well, I just wanted to say that I am one that listens to the to news quite often. I listen to the News Hour on PBS, and I listen to NPR. And I listen to sometimes the news out of Japan on the same station, you know. And I listen to, you know, sometimes the stuff after that and things like that. So I listen to, you know, BBS, you know, on the same station. Just wanted to let you know.
Well, and Stacy, I think that's admirable. What I'm going to say is going to contradict. You don't listen to what half the country listens to, which is, well, that's exaggeration. Fox News and the folks with the very, if you listen to the Fox News headlines, they're totally different from the NPR headlines.
Oh, no.
It's crazy.
I realize that.
Yeah.
I know a bunch of lies.
I don't know. I trust NPR personally, but you know, whatever. But thank you, Stacy.
Thanks, Stacy.
Next is Penny.
Hello, Penny.
Hey, can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. We just got through our Alabama primary, and I'll tell you what, I was so sick of hearing the ads for the different candidates. And, you know, the Democrats never even advertised on TV, but the Republicans had all their candidates, and they would say horrible things about each other. And, you know, and of course the inference was that you had to, you know, that if you didn't say you were behind Trump, then you shouldn't be elected. And, you know, I'm very discouraged about what I see going on. And I watch, ABC and CNN basically. What I like about those two stations is they really try to verify their facts, and they'll tell you if they can't confirm information that they talk about. But I think y'all are right in that I think eventually Trump is going to hit his comeuppance. And I think when he does, that half the country is eventually going to get very disillusioned, because they're going to realize that they've been fed a pack of lies. And I'm really afraid that this war is just going to go on and on and on. And that's my comment.
Yeah, it looks like that's going to happen. And by the way, his comeuppance is already happening because he's down to, you know, 34% approval. Mm-hmm. The rest of the country can't stand him. And the 34% are MAGA. That a third of our country are these MAGA guys, and they have their right to be MAGA. They have their right to believe whatever they want. And it is a cult of personality, like you're hearing in Alabama among the Republicans there. They just think that they have to love everything Trump does, and rarely does anybody dare criticize Trump. And it's an amazing hold he has over a third of the country, but that's shrinking, by the way. The more the economy deteriorates, that group is shrinking and their power is shrinking. And in November, we're going to see that, I think, in quite a few places.
Yeah, I hate the Raffensperger lost. I'm from Georgia originally, and I really liked him because he would stand up to Trump, and I really hate that.
Well, Raffensperger and I are of the same part of the Republican Party. We are Reagan Republicans, and we don't dig Trump. And Raffensperger was a man of total honor, and he never said anything bad about Trump, even when he was on that recorded phone call where Trump hit him up to find 1,100 votes.
Yeah, right.
Or 11,000 votes, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Raffensperger, you know, he did the best he could. I don't know if that's why he lost his primary for governor. I don't think he had a lot of money anyway, but he's a good man and his reputation will last as a good man. Whereas these other guys are going to have no reputation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Penny.
Thanks, Penny.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Who else do we have next?
We have Robert.
Is that Mr. Acosta?
It is.
Robert from California.
Okay. This is where I get the truth. When I hear the congressman's on, I want to listen to him. Maybe I don't agree with everything, but he's honest. And I never thought I'd say this. I'll be quick. I know there's other people. I have great respect for Ronald Reagan, and I didn't always vote for him, but he had a 5 o'clock drink every night with the Speaker of the House, and they tried to work it out. One, does Trump realize that what he says, like, I don't care about Americans, I don't care about the gas price or whatever, I'm fighting Iran. He's the president. He could say today is a lousy day and it would affect somebody in the world. That's one. Secondly, Mr. Congressman, does the guys like Massey, they're not going to support Trump. Massey already said, I have 7 months to go.
Yeah.
And forget the loyalty. And I wondered your comment about that.
Well,
and thirdly, finally, what happens to Ukraine? Nobody's mentioned that. Thank
you. That's a good point. Thank you, Robert.
Well, first of all, that's the most important one. Ukraine's winning without Trump. They've made their own cards going back to, oh, you have no cards. A year and 3 months later, we're wanting their cards. They've got this drone technology. Apparently, Ukrainian experts are all over the Middle East sharing their technology with the Gulf states to thwart the Iranian drones, which have done all this damage. And we now, our military wants in on what Ukraine has developed. So the cards have shifted, thank God, in Ukraine's favor. And we haven't even mentioned it, but I feel a downward momentum for Vladimir Putin, that he's on his way down. I'm not saying out, but down. He even 2 weeks ago in a speech said for the first time, I think the war in Ukraine is going to come to an end. And he even used Zelensky's name publicly. Called him Mr. Zelensky. Normally won't even mention the guy's name.
It's been over 4 years.
Yeah, over 4 years. So I think I feel good about that. I mean, Orban lost. Putin's going down. Trump's going down. So the three big autocrats who love each other are going to go down because the world doesn't want this kind of stuff. And there was something else you mentioned. What was the second point? Ukraine was point number three. What was number two?
Will these guys vote against the Massey?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So in the Senate now, we had a vote
loyalty. Yeah.
Right. We had a vote already, on the War Powers Act thing that we were talking about before with Mitch. And, Cassidy, who just was defeated in effect by Trump last Saturday in Louisiana, he voted now the other way because he figured, hey, I'm out.
Yeah.
I got 7 months left. Cornyn, if Cornyn loses his runoff this coming Tuesday, which he probably will, that he is going to be so bitter against Trump. So you got him, Cassidy, Tillis, McConnell, Collins, Murkowski. There's six Republicans who will screw over Trump every time they can for the rest of this year. Every time. And he created this, you know. Yeah. He did it in Georgia in 2021 when he had the two special elections and lost both of them for the U.S. Senate. He cost us being the Republicans, control of the Senate by screwing around with Herschel Walker and all that stuff. I mean, Trump just can't help but screw things up.
And don't forget Lisa Murkowski, is it? She might vote. She's pretty good.
Yeah, I put her in my list. She and Susan Collins are in there.
Okay.
So, thank you, Robert.
Thanks, Robert.
We have about 3 more minutes, and I think we have one more hand, Jeanette.
Yes, that's Jean. Go ahead really quickly, please.
Okay.
Jean?
I will. Hi, everybody. One topic that you didn't get to is the IRS fiasco.
Oh, God, yeah. God.
Good point.
So what would you like to say about that?
Well, the idea that the President of the United States and his family would get some special dispensation where they could never be audited or looked at for the rest of their lives is crazy. And it's Orban-like in Hungary. In other words, it's the government corruption to protect the corrupt government official. And this just is so un-American. And I don't think that's going to happen either, by the way. I think Congress is just not going to accept it. Even the Republicans will not accept that. Reagan used to use this term. I've had it up to my Easter with this stuff. And I think that's where they're at with all this special stuff with Trump. The ballroom, the arch, the reflecting pool, naming everything after himself.
Like the Kennedy Center.
The Donald Trump Kennedy Center. How does that make any sense?
He and just by amazes the way, me every time. I think he can't top whatever he's done, he does.
Yeah, and I just saw a thing. I just saw a thing before we did the show. If we think it's bad now, in the next 6 months before the election, he's going to go hog wild on looting everything he can get his mitts on.
Oh, yeah.
While he still can.
Yep.
Gene, thank you very much. We appreciate your input as always. And we're going to have to wrap up. I'm afraid, Congressman, it's always a pleasure having you on. We're going to have you back soon again. And let's hope this war comes to an end. It's been about 3 or 4 months. Donald Trump said it was only going to last a couple of weeks, as far as I remember.
Well, he says a lot of stuff. Says a lot of stuff.
And you notice whenever he can't finish something, he just kind of lets it drop, you know?
Yeah.
Like Ukraine and I can't even think, but whenever things don't go his way, he just kind of lets it drop.
Right. So now we're off talking about going into Cuba while we haven't done the Iranian thing. The American people never voted for any of this. They don't want this.
Nope.
Oh, no. Thanks, Congressman. We appreciate
you. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Peter. Thank you. Thank you.
And thanks to everybody else for helping us out today, too. And go safe with God's abundant blessings, everybody. And have a great week. Talk to you soon.
Welcome to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal. Our poem today is Do Not Stand at My Grave and Weep by Mary Elizabeth Fry. Do not stand at my grave and weep. I am not there. I do not sleep. I am a thousand winds that blow. I am the diamond glints on snow. I am the sun on ripened grain. I am the gentle autumn's rain. When you awaken in the morning's hush, I am the swift uplifting rush of quiet birds in circling flight. I am the stars that shine at night. Do not stand at my grave and cry. I am not there. I did not die. You've been listening to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal, and read by me, Nikki Wichelow. Thanks for listening. May your life be filled with the magic of poetry.